Welcome to Rework, a podcast by Basecamp about the better way to work and run your business. I'm your host, Sean Hildner. This week, we're talking about the chapter, Be a Curator. I don't remember who said this, but maybe it was John Hodgman. So the difference between a collection and a hoard is curation. As someone who has far too many comic books and action figures, this chapter really resonated with me. And here to make me feel better about those life choices are Basecamp's co-founders and the authors of Rework, David Heinemeier Hansen. How are you?
Good, good.
And Jason Fried, how are you?
Doing all right, thank you.
What does sort of, in a broad sense, this editing process look like for designing software, specifically for designing Basecamp?
There's a few phases. One is building a new product. You take this big idea and you hone it and you shape it into like version one, which is sort of your own version, is how we kind of think of it. And there's a bunch of things that we don't do, we can't fit in, that we know we might want to do later. So it's really a challenge of figuring out what are the things, what are the essentials that make this thing work. Mm-hmm. So there's that, which I'm collapsing a lot of work into that quick description. There's that. There's also, as you go and build from there, so like we're building a bunch of new Basecamp features right now, as we do every 6 to 8 weeks. And you've got to figure out what do those features look like, because there's always more that you want to do and more that you can do and more than you have more ideas than you can actually handle. So how do you wring that stuff out so you're just left with what matters? That's the other part of editing. They're the same process, but they're, you know, one's like a complete product and one's a feature. Mm-hmm. But a feature is like a, you know, a microcosm of a larger project or product. So a lot of it has to do with like who's available to work on it, what your ambitions are at the moment, how important is this particular thing. Another thing we talk about is how much time are we willing to give something, not how long is it going to take, but how much are we willing to give. So this feature we're willing to spend 4 weeks on, for example, is also a form of editing. It's non-specific in that you're not addressing individual things in it, why it's 4 weeks, but you're saying 4 weeks is our appetite, and now we've got to edit this down to make it fit within that time frame.
And I think it's those constraints that force you to be a curator. Because I think actually most people without any form of constraints are not necessarily the best curators. It's quite hard to be a good curator if you don't have some boundaries forcing you to be that. So this is why with ShapeUp, we've set it up in this way that, you know what, we're just going to work in 6 week increments. Not because all versions of all features fit in 6 weeks, but because if we have that boundary, we're forcing ourselves to be that curator about what goes in and what doesn't go in. And you see this whenever we're done with a project, because it's always full of to-dos we didn't check off. There's always a bunch of lists and a bunch of things that we found that like, well, it could have also done that, but it didn't because we were forced to choose. And I think that that's really that powerful technique where sometimes it's hard to pin out exactly like, well, what should go in or what shouldn't go in. It's in the comparison. Hey, you can fit three things. You got 10. What's the most important three? That's actually not that difficult of a process most of the time. Sometimes there's a bit of back and forth over it. But a lot of the times you go like, you know what? If I can only have three, it's going to be these three. And very often you realize that the other seven things, not only weren't they essential, in many cases, it's actually worse. It's worse to put it all in. And it's the same thing with feature requests that come from customers. I mean, we'll receive tons of requests right, every week.
Right.
And every single request, someone will go like, this is really important. But you're the one left with hundreds, if not thousands, of requests. And you might think in isolation, each one of these things makes sense to some extent. I mean, some of them don't make sense, but a lot of them do make sense. And you also realize you can't put 1,000 things in. If you put everyone's stuff in there, it's going to be a mess.
That's a hoard.
Jason Osman has this idea of like, if the product was physical, it'd be quite apparent. Right. If we were building a radio and you're like, how many knobs and dials and buttons can you fit on this thing before it's obvious that it's a mess? It's not as obvious with software. And in some ways, software is more forgiving. I mean, if you were to count up every single screen that Basecamp has, Basecamp is not a minimalist product.
Right.
It's not a minimalist product in terms of the number of things that it does. But most of those features actually are in some degrees quite minimalist. You compare something like Campfire to other chat tools, and it does what, a hundredth of the same. So I think that's the key part of the curation process, is to force yourself into it. It's just that you don't need this mythical Steve Jobs character, where even if he had a $1 trillion company with, well, I guess it was never $1 trillion with Steve at the helm, but $1 billion company who is in essence has all the resources at his disposal, he was still able to be a curator. Like, those people are quite rare. For the rest of us, you need constraints.
That said, I would also say that even Apple, let's just use the terrible example of Apple. Apple has more ideas than they can do. Everyone has more ideas than they can do. Every single company. Promise you, everyone has to go through this process. And I think one of the real challenges here for companies with a lot of ideas is never shipping, because you always keep piling more and more and more. And Apple's quite good at shipping. They're one of the best in the world at it. I mean, the amount of gains they can make in a relatively short period of time on an annual schedule or biannual schedule is pretty impressive. Certainly, you know, they're leaving a bunch on the table, though. Whatever they come out with, it's not the exact idea they had. They're cutting stuff back. So every company has more ideas than they can deal with. Ideas really aren't the problem. It's figuring out like which ones to do and what version of those do you do.
Hey, just jumping in to say, here is where we fix Jason's microphone issues, so he'll be sounding much better from here on out. All right, enjoy the rest of the show. So how do you start? Do you start with the list of everything, the 1,000 things you could put in, and edit that list down? Or do you start by thinking, okay, this product needs these 4 essentials, and we can add on to that?
David might do it differently. I'll just answer how. Yeah, like, yeah. I don't make the list. I have these floating ideas that are roughly orbiting, you know, this concept. And we just start somewhere, basically.
Throw a dart at the wall.
Well, you pick the epicenter, to get back to an earlier episode. You pick the epicenter and you sort of build out from there. And when you build, you have new ideas that come up again. That's why I don't like the idea of writing all your ideas down up front, because you're limiting yourself. You're going to come up with new ideas as you go. And some of the ideas you had aren't going to make sense. And some of the things you thought were priorities don't turn out to be. I remember there was a feature in Hey early on. Part of the initial idea of Hey was this feature called handoffs, which we were all convinced, and still, by the way, it might be a good idea, but we were convinced that it was just the essential, one of the essential pieces of the product. We never built it. And we don't feel ourselves needing it. We actually built something else. We built this idea of notes into email threads, which is kind of close enough, turns out. So sometimes you have these babies basically, and you're like, we're not going to fall in love with them because they're not, you don't need them until you build them. And so that's how we do it. We just kind of have the ideas, start somewhere, go see where it takes us. And at some point you feel like you sort of have enough, that this thing is formed up enough for version one, recognizing there's always time to do more and more and more down the road.
David, how about you? Do you, when you're approaching something, do you start with a big list of all the possibilities and winnow it down from there?
No, I think I'm right alongside Jason there. Even on the technical side of how you approach the implementation, is you simply start like, what is the thing you have to do for, like, what's the epicenter? What's the thing you have to do first for this thing to even start making any sense at all? Start pulling on that thread and have the confidence that like you're going to figure it out. And I think that's where the shape up idea of the budget, like, this is worth 4 weeks, gives you some real guidance quite early on. It's kind of like in racing, we have this term of like look up, right? Like, it's a very natural instinct to look right in front of your car. You're just paying attention right in front of where you are, but you need to look up. You need to look to the next corner to actually let your mind and body gel in such a way that you turn into just the right point and you go out. When you have this idea that like, you know what? We think this is worth 4 weeks. You quite quickly realize the right paths to go down. Because you look at some of the tech stuff and you go like, you know what? There is a path here, but like that seems like a science project. I can't fit that within a 4 week scope. So you're guiding this thing by looking up and going like, you know what? It's worth 4 weeks. We're gonna guide in that direction, and we're gonna do it as we go. We're gonna pull on this thread, and we're constantly gonna make these small decisions about what's worth it and what's not. Which leads to this other thing that I don't remember if we have the essay on this in Rework or that was in Getting Real, but trading concessions. That when you work with others as a team to solve a project, you're all pulling on slightly different threads. You're all trying to implement this feature or this product, but Jason, when he approaches something, he'll approach it obviously from design first. And then I'll start pulling on the same thread and I'll realize, you know what, there's some things here that doesn't quite square with the four-week budget we have in mind. So I'll suggest something to Jason, like, could we just do this instead? Very often the answer is like, yeah, fine. I just scribbled that in. That was not important. Sometimes the answer is no, absolutely not. This is essential to the thing. So we got to do that. And I think in that collaboration, you keep pulling on the thread at the same time, trading those concessions as you go. It's easier. You get the information as you need it. Like, we're just not smart enough to imagine everything up front. In the tech or development community, it's often called this idea of big upfront design, that you try to write down in minute detail what the whole thing is going to be. And it's just been an utter failure for basically the history of computer science. And the vast majority of these mega projects, they fail because of that. Someone sits down early on and tries to imagine the entire future because they don't have the confidence that someone can figure it out as they go, when really, that's the only way.
I'm wondering how Basecamp's curation, and if Basecamp is jazz software and it's about the features you don't play, how does that curation come through in our marketing?
This is a good question, because, I mean, you could describe the whole product, like on the homepage, for example, or something like that. You could also have another page that lists all the features. I think we did this for the Rails site, David, the new Rails site. Isn't there like a features page or something that's actually the detailed?
It's so funny. There was going to be, and I thought in my head it made perfect sense. And by the time we had shaped the rest of the site, I'm like, we don't need it. And it seems like a lot of work. So let's just not do it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's perfect curation right there.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just like, I mean, this is fundamental though, which is what is the message? Like, I'm just going to look at the Rails site while we're looking at this, because I remember we did this recently. The messaging at the top is all about compress the complexity. Like, that's the message. Rails does more than that. And there's no feature called compress the complexity in Rails, right? But that's the messaging. That's the idea that David wants to get across with Rails. So it is pure curation. It's the most curated statement, in fact, of all, which is, what's the one thing you can kind of say to sort of set the tone? Mm-hmm. And that really is boiling it down to something. Now, in some cases, it's not about the product at all. It's more of a transfer of emotion or some reaching statement where, you know, you're selling aspiration or something like that.
Yeah.
That is disconnected from what the product, well, it's not disconnected from what it does, but it's not tying back to a specific feature, but it's more of an idea that you're sharing. So I do think that copywriting, especially headline writing, is really the art of editing and curation and really trying to get a bigger idea across in just a handful of words.
Yeah, I guess what I'm asking is how important is it to your marketing to market that this is a curated product?
Like,
do you know what I mean? It's,
yeah.
It's saying we made these decisions and chose these very specific features for this reason. And here's what it's missing and here's why it's missing it.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think we've changed our mind on this many times over the years. I remember at some point early on, there was some like statement, like everything you need, nothing you don't, or something
right.
like that,
yeah,
which
yeah.
is sort of a statement like that, but it's a little bit generic. On the new Basecamp site we're working on right now, we are actually choosing to show far more pictures than text than we have in the past. Mm-hmm. But I'm also going to write this letter that's going to be a dedicated page on the site, which is a little bit of the history of the product and why we started, why we, you know, built it and what we're trying to solve. And in that letter, I'll probably go into the fact that we wanted to build something that was straightforward and didn't do everything. And, you know, the competitive products at the time were all about charts and graphs, and we chose a different direction. So there'll be some of that, because I feel like when you're telling a story, you can get into some of those details yeah. in a different way. Then broadly saying like our product is less than the other ones is actually an interesting angle. And we talk about it, I think, verbally, but I also don't know if it would land well.
Right.
You know, as a headline without support. So it's, I don't know. This is sort of what's fun about ultimately about A/B testing and playing with stuff like this, is you could take ideas that you wouldn't really bet the farm on, but you could bet 10% of the farm on and see like how that 10% does. And you go, oh, maybe this 10% is actually the farm. We should maybe bet the whole thing on this one statement that we didn't know was any good. It's too risky to try.
Yeah.
But let's try it a little bit and see what happens. So that's part of the fun too.
Yeah. I do think that we've set up this oppositional positioning sometimes when it comes, for example, to Gantt charts, which perhaps is one of the most requested features of all time that we've kind of militantly decided not to do that. Do you know what? That cuts against the grain of what we want to do. As Jason said, the founding statement of Basecamp was this was about project management, about communication, not charts and graphs. And that kind of meant that, you know what? Gantt charts is almost something we proudly didn't do. I don't think we lean on that statement as much now as we perhaps used to do. Some of it is also just a function of time, right? We used to talk more explicitly about less software, which is a position that's easier to take when you have fewer resources, when you have one programmer and a couple of designers. Hey, you should lean on that. You should lean more heavily on your constraints and the benefits of that. And then when you're in a slightly different position, it's not so much that you change your mind. It's just that where do you put your emphasis, right? Like, we don't need to put the emphasis as much on all the things that we don't do in comparison to the fact that, like, out of the five things that Basecamp does and the five other products it replaces them with highly curated versions of that. Right, as I said, if you compare the chat version to other chat programs, it's an incredibly distilled version. The same thing if you go for file sharing, the same thing if you go for the whole thing. So there's like multiple layers you can do this at, right? Like, on the one hand, you could say Basecamp does more than any of these things because it does the work of five products. But then when you look at the comparison to each of those products individually, they look highly curated and highly contained and feature tight.
Well, perfect. I think that is a great place to wrap up that conversation. Looks like we have a few minutes here. You want to take a question from a listener?
Sure, let's do that.
We've got one here from Dylan.
Hey, Jason and David, this is Dylan. When you have a new company idea and you take it 0 to 1, but then realize it's not something you want to pursue, how do you go about finding and compensating an operator to run it?
I will tell you that I don't think we know how to do this. We've not really done a great job with it in the past. We tried to do it once with... actually, this is not true. Okay, let me step back on that. Because we've done it a couple times. I think once worked better than the other time. But still, it's hard. We sort of spun off HiRISE. You know, we built HiRISE as a product. You're speaking about a company, but we'll take a product here. Because essentially, HiRISE could be its own company.
Yeah.
We built it for a while. We spun it off, sort of handed it over to a team, which we basically hired a COO or CEO essentially to build their own team. And they ran that for 3 years. And then we ended up taking it back after 3 years. We weren't really thrilled with the direction, let's just say. And so we took it back. So now we have it again. So we weren't really good at perhaps letting it go completely. And then, but we did this also with Know Your Company, which is another product we built, handed that one off to someone. And she sort of built, she took it and ran with it in a different direction and has done a really wonderful job on it in a way that we couldn't have done. In our case, in our world, we knew both of these people.
Yeah.
So we knew Nathan, we knew Claire, and we already had established a degree of confidence and understanding about who they are and what they can do. I think it'd be extremely difficult for us to hand something off to a team we don't know and don't have a history with.
Right.
But that's just more probably our situation. It's not that there aren't incredible teams out there who do this all the time.
Yeah.
I just don't know if we know how to do that very well. I think we're very particular and have a very specific way of thinking about things. And I think it becomes harder and your options become narrower as you are pickier and pickier about what happens with the thing that you built.
Yeah.
Versus just not really caring as much and just handing it off and saying it's out. So anyway, that's my quick take. I do think though that one other thing is to say, like, if you're not feeling it, it's probably a good idea not to keep running it. And one idea could just be to close it down.
Right.
Businesses close down. Things don't have to survive forever. That might be a better outcome as well. But anyway, I don't know what you think, David.
Yeah, I think when I think back of all these experiences, where it's difficult is when you still feel like it's your reputation, your goodwill that's on the line. Which I think was more true in the HiRISE case. It was more difficult for us to let go of it because we still felt like that reflected on the company. And then you end up being sort of a passenger driver, right? Like, you want to second guess and you want to, like, oh, if they take a wrong turn or whatever, you want to go like, versus if you can get to terms with the fact that it's no longer yours. And that was the problem with the HiRISE thing, right? It was still 100% ours. We spun it off as a separate company, but the company was a wholly owned subsidiary of Basecamp. So that both created the responsibility to be on the hook for it, but it also meant that it was fully ours. We've spun off actually a number of other things too. We had a job board called WeWorkRemotely.com, which we just sold outright for a one-time lump sum cash to someone to run it. And I'm actually just looking at it now and it looks totally fine. I mean, it's a job board. not like there's high-rise levels of complexities or different paths to take perhaps, but like I haven't thought about it in until we just talked about it in a very long time.
I think we sold it too cheap. I thought about it.
And one that was a little closer was something called Sortfolio. So Sortfolio.com was something we actually sold to two people who took this on. It's still running. I'm looking at it right now. It still looks quite similar to the original version that we built at Basecamp, but it had that same character. Boom, we've sold it. It now is someone else's. That's it.
No longer your darling.
Exactly. Yeah. No longer our darling. No longer our reputation. No longer our influence on it. And I think that works better. I will say there is actually a growing number of holding companies, if you will, that kind of will buy small businesses, small SaaS businesses from founders who no longer want to run them. So that's also something you could look into where you don't have to find a whole team to do it. If you just want a clean transaction, there are now these holding companies that buy smaller SaaS companies. And that looks like it actually has been working out quite well for several of them.
Well, thank you for your question, Dylan. If any of you have questions for Jason or David, leave a voicemail at 708-628-7850, or better yet, record a voice memo on your phone and email it to me at hello@rework.fm. And that should do it for this week, right on time. Next week, we'll be talking about the chapter, Throw Less at the Problem. But for now, I would like to say thank you to David Heinemeier Hansen.
Thanks, Sean.
And thank you, Jason Fried.
Thank you.
All right, fantastic. We'll see you guys next week.
Adios.
Rework is a production of Basecamp. Our theme music is by Clipart. We're on the web at rework.fm, where you can find show notes and transcripts for this and every episode of Rework. We're also on Twitter at Rework Podcast. If you're following along with the book, next week we'll be discussing the chapter Throw Less at the Problem. And if you like the show, I'd really appreciate it if you would leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, or wherever you're listening to this.